wherever you are now, whatever position you're in today, there's something that you can do today to get you to the next level. And it's continuing to put yourself outside of your comfort zone.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Daisy Serrano serves as managing partner for Make It Rain Capital, a private equity multifamily investment firm focused on acquiring apartment properties. Daisy is a general partner in 42 units and a limited partner in 445 units across two assets in Central Texas, totaling $40 million in value. She is a leader with the Women's Real Estate Network, Real Estate Association of Latin Professionals, and Multifamily Masters Austin. Daisy's goals are to help more individuals invest in real estate multifamily, to empower her community through mentorship and access, and to be a positive role model for her family and to retire her parents. Daisy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Sam. Nice to be here with you.
Oh, man, the pleasure's all mine. I think that's probably the most unique goal that I've seen in someone's bio. I love that. And I'm excited to really dig into that and kind of, because that sounds like that's part of your why. And I'm excited to jump in on that. But before we get too far down a rabbit hole, which I'm known for doing, let's first hear the same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show, which is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, totally. So I started, my background is actually in international education. I was in that space for about 10 years and not interested or ever thought that I'd be in real estate at all. And, you know, my husband, boyfriend at the time introduced me to Rich Dad, Poor Dad and this whole concept of multifamily syndication, right? And so I skipped the single family altogether. I think a lot of people start within the single family space. We skipped that altogether and invested when we were still dating together at the time into our first multifamily syndication. And, you know, the distributions were great once we saw the power of having that income, right? And just building that out more than, you know, we got hooked, right? Like so many others. So that's where we started. We started investing passively in multifamily syndications, and somewhere down the line, and we can get into that as much as you'd like, but somewhere down the line, we realized we want to be the ones, you know, offering these opportunities and just spreading the word about these alternative investment options to other people. And so decided to jump onto the active side. So that made us move from California, where we were born and raised, both of us, to Texas, to Austin, where we are now. And we're now active on a 42 unit here in town, in Austin, in North Austin, and growing from there. So we've been able to now transition me out of my W-2 job. My husband is still working and, you know, doing real estate together. And I've now, you know, been able to focus full time on the acquisitions for multifamily side. So that's where I am now. And yeah, anywhere that you want to kind of dig a little bit deeper into, I'm happy to do that.
That's a lot of movement and a lot of commitment to investing in real estate, you know, going, you know, not only just saying, okay, we're going to invest in real estate, but we're going to relocate our family. And was that relocation strictly because of real estate?
It was. Yes. I mean, that was the driving factor for sure. There were other bonuses and pluses, right? The cost of living and, you know, being boots on the ground and being able to get to the, you know, the deals that we were looking at very quickly. But yeah, it was, the focus was really because of the multifamily side.
Wow. That's really cool. Good for you. I mean, that's taking it to the next level when you decide to pick up and move across the country to pursue your real estate dream. So that's absolutely fantastic. You guys have closed a 42 unit and now you're doing acquisitions. What have been some of the things that have helped you, I guess, build out your acquisition framework there in Austin?
Yeah, I would say it's been a couple of things, right? It's being boots on the ground, just being able to get out into the market very quickly. We're very hyper-focused on Austin and San Antonio. So being in Austin, we're able to get out to San Antonio within an hour and a half and just drive out, especially with me now being full-time focused on the acquisitions piece. So, you know, building those broker relations, getting out there, really understanding the markets a lot more. I think from, you know, investing out of state, we would fly out and look at the properties and, you know, try to do as much as we could on that end, but you're still out of state, right? So being very local has been, you know, a lot of what we see, you know, talking, having conversations with friends or colleagues, is that really what's reflected in the data as well, right? Because it can be one thing, you know, what you see on a lot of the publications online versus what's actually happening. And then, you know, seeing some of those gaps, right? Where maybe something is happening and it's not quite at the data state yet, but we're able to see those things in advance. So that I would say is one big piece of the puzzle for sure. And then, you know, the other one is just, you know, being able to talk to investors and and, you know, really understand the market dynamics within, you know, where we're focused, right? So I think a big part of that, like I mentioned, is, you know, those broker relations and, you know, maintaining communication with a lot of the different partners that we're associated with. But then also now with investors and with other groups that we're looking to partner with, it's being that boots on the ground presence. So I would say it's a combination of those two things.
Right. I want to circle back to what you said earlier about finding things as boots on the ground. You know things that aren't reflected in the data. What comes to mind when you say that?
Yeah, I'm thinking more so about around path of progress, right? Or there's certain areas we focus mostly on B and C assets. And so there might be, you know, a property that on paper looked okay, right? And then once we drive it and we're in that pocket specifically, you know, the next maybe two blocks down, it fits the criteria of what the OM stated, the offering memorandum. But then being there, it's completely different, right? And it is going in that direction, right? Being in a path of progress area, but it's not quite there yet. So those are some of the different things. And my husband is in fintech, financial tech. He works a lot with contractors all over the state and the country. And so looking at, you know, ground up development and demand for multifamily in specific pockets, he's able to see a lot of that because of his position as well. And so, you know, now that we're here, it's okay, there's this area that not a lot of people know of in town. Let's go check it out, right? Let's just drive it and see what it's like in the day, see what it's like at night, you know, and make sure that we're able to see those things that maybe are not quite measurables that people talk about, but are more of like feeler, non-subjective things, right? That you need to look out for.
Yeah, no, and you hit it on the head. And I think that's part of the art of investing is, you know, finding the subjective things, not the non-objective, or the, however you want to say it. I'm probably butchering it, but finding the things that are not that again, they're not concrete fixed. It's a gut feel. It is using all of your senses to go, what's going on here? What do I see happening? Do I like it? What, you know, and I love the fact that you said seeing it a day and seeing it at night, because I think those are two really important things. You know, we used to buy parking lots, and it was one of those businesses where it could be dead during the day and completely busy at night, or it could be completely busy during the day and dead at night. So you had to go at all times of day to figure out, is this a good investment? I don't know. But, you know, maybe, you know, think probably for different reasons you want to see these assets, and especially as you get into C-class assets, what happens at night?
Exactly.
You know, you can learn a lot by just taking a quick tour around a property at night. So that's really, really cool. You said your husband's in fintech, and I know this is not an interview with your husband on the call. Does his understanding of fintech assist you when you are doing research on property?
It does. I would say, you know, as I mentioned, it's more so on, his name is Luke, and, you know, we work very closely on the business, right? And so sure. His exposure to, you know, access to contractors and development, maybe why things are not developing in certain areas. And, you know, if there is a multifamily property that we're looking at in that area, then, you know, he has a lot of data around things that are maybe more hidden, right? That you wouldn't be able to find as easily online. So that I would say has had a huge impact, right? In knowing sort of what areas to focus on and maybe which ones not to. And he's very analytical as well. So he has an engineering and business background. And so, you know, digs a lot into, you know, maybe ask some of these questions that, you know, I wouldn't think to. And, you know, so it's a very dynamic, I would say, duo for us. We have very different personalities and very different strengths. And so I think it's a very great complement to be able to work together.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. What are some of the things that you learned taking down your first 42 unit deal that you wish you had known before you had taken it down?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, sometimes you don't know what you know until you're in that position, right? And, you know, the 42 unit that we have, it's in a path of progress, right? It's an area that is continuing to become more and more of a tech hub in here in Austin, but it's still in progress, right? And so, you know, as we acquired the property and a lot of the units were month to month, I would say of the 42, about 20 were month to month. And at the time we saw that as a negative, right? Because there's a possibility that potentially 50%, close to 50% of your tenant base, you know, moves out at once. And once there's new management, you just never know what's going to happen. There's new property management. There's a lot of changes that are coming. But I would say that one thing that turned into a positive from that experience is that a lot of the renovations that were set out to be done, right, the unit turns within an 18-month period have been successfully done a lot quicker than anticipated because of those month-to-month leases. And the other part of it is that with the eviction moratorium, right, there with the lease coming up on, you know, on not being due or needed to be leased again to renewed, then that's given us the opportunity to come in and turn those units faster than we would have anticipated. So the downside is that going through the CapEx budget, it seems like we've used a lot more of that CapEx in a shorter amount of time. But in reality, it's, you know, being able to come in and turn those units faster than anticipated.
Right. And obviously the benefit there when you get those units turned is that you then can bump rents to more of a market rent. I want to circle back on what you were saying about a month-to-month lease and then the eviction moratorium. I'm not sure I tracked on how that was helpful.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, and the eviction moratorium was supposed to end July 30th, and that got extended out to October 3rd, right? So with that, I think in talking to a lot of colleagues that are in the space, you know, looking at, they're waiting for the eviction moratorium to be able to take action with certain tenants that were not communicating, that were not on payment plans, that were just not contributing and trying to, you know, have a contract in place with property management to pay those off. And with us, that was never an issue. So this was a conversation that I was having very recently where, you know, a lot of my colleagues were not able to take any action because of that. And for us, it didn't affect us, you know, that extension of the eviction moratorium, because a lot of the leases were month to month.
Right. And even if they're month to month, that means that you just weren't renewing their lease.
Exactly.
Right. So when you don't do that, were you just taking a hit on what they owed for back rent and just saying, all right, so you know me for 6, 9, 12 months of rent, get out, and then we'll put somebody new in that can actually start paying. Is that the way that played out? Or I'm thinking kind of worst case scenario there, but I don't know. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, it was resident dependent, right? I know that there was one resident who hadn't been on a payment plan, hadn't made any effort to reach out or respond right to property management. And in addition to that, there were maybe about 6 units that had residents that had moved out in different units because of that resident specifically. It was a problem tenant, right?
Sure.
So with that, you know, there was that opportunity to be able to release him from the contract, right, from his lease. And then we took the hit on the back end.
Right. Yeah. That's really fascinating. I mean, yeah, you take the hit on that, which that's unfortunate. But sometimes the cost of getting somebody out is less than the cost of keeping them in. So waving goodbye isn't always a bad thing. When those leases came up and the tenants still didn't want to make right, and how it sounded like you were able to successfully get them to move out. I mean, even without a month-to-month lease, I would imagine that they could have just squatted and been like, well, still can't evict me.
Yeah, for some of them, that was the case, and for some not, right? So the majority of the residents, I would say, you know, are trying to be on a plan, right? Get a lot of the Texas relief or even national relief that's still happening. So with residents that are, you know, trying to work with the property management company, then we're working with them as well. So it's kind of a mix, right? There's some tenants to where, you know, if they're in a good standing, even if the lease is up, then you want to try to renew, you know, or try to help them, you know, wait for the Texas relief to come through. But then in other cases, right, where there is criminal activity or, you know, other reasons, you know, beyond the payment of the rent, then you are able to evict regardless of the moratorium.
Got it. That's awesome. Very, very, very good. Thanks for taking the time to explain some of the nuance there. I think that's going to be an interesting piece of information there that'll kind of help some people out. Let's talk about your why a little bit. You've got goals here. You said your goals are to help more individuals invest in real estate, to multifamily, empower your community, and to be a positive role model for your family. What does that all mean?
Yeah, my background, I would say, has impacted a lot of that big why for me. I think from a very young age, my parents are from Mexico, a Mexican American, and very community oriented. And so with that, you know, being a positive role model, I think there's always been a lot of people around me, and, you know, the opportunity that I've had coming from immigrant parents to be born and raised in the U.S., to have an education, right, to go to higher education, to, you know, have a job, and now see, you know, where my family came from. income, it's really important for me to be able to give back, right? And help, you know, my cousins or younger siblings or, you know, nieces and nephews, whoever that might be. And so for me, I, you know, nobody in my family had ever invested or known about this syndication space, right? The syndication world. And so now that I've been exposed to it, it's really important for me to be able to let others know that it's possible, right? And it doesn't mean that they have to invest. It means that there's access, that people know that this is something that they can be involved with. And so as much as we can, right, through the podcast that we have, through the meetup, through everything that we do with the company, it's about letting people know that this is something that's accessible and that's possible. And it's just a matter of educating yourself, right? Understanding what it is that you're putting your money into. And you can, right? Even if you don't have the cash, you can use self-directed IRA. You can use like other retirement accounts to be able to do that. So that's a lot of my why is to be able to help my community, to help people that I know that have no idea that this is possible. And, you know, now that my parents are a little bit older, to be able to help them retire as well. That's, you know, I would say my number one why is that, right? Is being able to retire my parents. And we're definitely making progress in that direction. We're not quite there yet, but making progress in that direction, right? Because for me, if I can't use what I'm learning and, you know, everything that I'm surrounded with now being in this space to help my community, my family, my friends, people around me, then what's the whole point of everything we're doing?
Right, man, you said it. I love that. That's going to be the highlight reel from this episode. That's for sure. You know, what's the point of all this if we can't help the people around us while we're doing it? That's mm-hmm. That's really cool. And I love the fact that you want to retire your parents. I think for anybody that comes from a working class background or someone that, you know, we grew up my family grew up very poor, right? Mm-hmm. And so you see the struggle and it's real. It's like, man, yes. you saw the nights where your parents are worried about, gosh, how are we going to pay the bills? How are we going to put food on the table? You know, working their tails off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mom comes to me at this point in life and at the latter end of their career, they actually made a little bit of money, which was hilarious. But so now I handle a lot of their investments for them. Right. Wow. And she's always like, oh, son, I'm so sorry you're taking care of this. It's so much work. I'm like, not really, mom. This is great. I'm so happy to do it. Like, I'm so happy to do it. Like, I'm putting you in things that's just, it's going to allow you guys to do what you do and not to stress.
So, yes.
Good for you. Good for you for doing that. That's a beautiful why. And I really enjoy that. Anything else before we jump here into the final four that you'd really love to highlight about kind of where you see markets going or, you know, about mission statement for your company or just give us a picture, maybe even if you will, of where you guys want to be in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, definitely. So in 10 years, let's take it there because we have a business plan around, you know, our 10-year goals. And it's really for Luke and myself to be within the business in the next 3 years, right? For him to be out of his W-2 and be working on the business. And, you know, within the next 10 years, the business is running on its own and we're not having to be directly involved. You know, we've built out the infrastructure and, you know, everything on the back end, right? To have it flowing and, you know, and it is a true flow, right? It's not resistance. And, you know, we have the right people in the right seats and, you know, we're able to focus on our family, our community, on creating impact, on all of these bigger whys and bigger things that are going to move the world forward, right? In a positive direction. So that's the 10-year goal. And in a very big picture, of course, there's numbers and, you know, income and all of that attached to it, but that's the higher level goal, I would say. And my takeaway or my message to your audience is, you know, I know a lot of your audience, Sam, is looking to potentially start or they're already investing, right? Passively or actively. My suggestion is that, you know, wherever you are now, whatever position you're in today, there's something that you can do today to get you to the next level. And it's continuing to put yourself outside of your comfort zone, continuing to take action when it's not comfortable, when you're tired, when, you know, you finish your W-2, because a lot of us have been there in that state, right? Because when that goal is so much bigger than you, and the why is so much bigger than you, then everything else will follow. So that's my big takeaway that I tell everybody. I am not special. I am not smarter than anybody else. I just had access and have been exposed to the right people, exposing myself to the right network. And that's what's gotten me to where I am. So I'm not special. Because I'm here, it doesn't mean that you can't. So anybody can be in my position. You just work hard, put yourself in the right spaces, educate yourself, and you'll get there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Daisy, I've certainly enjoyed it. Let's jump here into the final four. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
I would do what I did the first time around is I would put it into a multifamily real estate syndication. Why? Because there's so much learning that I took away from my own experience, right? Seeing the power of distribution, seeing the power of creating generational wealth. And that's really what got me started. So I would do what I did already.
Love it. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I would say invest with the right person, with the right group, right? Make sure that it's somebody you know, like, and trust, that has the reputation. Make sure you understand who they are as a person, because when things get rough, I think that's when, you know, you see, you know, how people will really react, right, in difficult situations. So really understand who you're working with, know them on a personal level, and at some point, take the leap.
Got it. That's awesome. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Yeah, I would say giving back. That's one thing that's really important to us. And we make sure to do that, whether it's, you know, going to coffee with somebody that has absolutely no experience and sharing what I did right from the get-go. You know, the meetup that we started here in Austin, it's really around creating a community and bringing people together, right? And helping to connect somebody. That's one of my favorite things in the world is helping to connect people with somebody else, right? If I can do that for somebody else and they can do it for somebody else, I think it's just a trickle effect in the world.
I love it. Daisy, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yep. Best way is makeitraincapital.com or you can email me daisy@makeitraincapital.com. Pretty easy.
Daisy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.